Welcome all to Picnic and a night of food, science, and more food, you'll be happy to hear. 2-1 food to science, we promise you tonight.
I like the sounds of that. That's how the how and why things taste the way they do dinner at Picnic Cafe on the Upper West Side of Manhattan started off last night. Two scientists who study food and taste, 60 diners who got to eat food, and our producer, Ilan Chilag, were all there. He's in the studio to tell us about. Did I just call you Ilan Chilag again?
Yeah, that's worked for
I'm
him.
I'm just going to change my name.
Ilan Chilag. Ian Chilag is here in studio
I'm
to tell us
Ilan today.
What you found out. So this sounded like a pretty fun assignment that you assigned to yourself.
Yeah. My job is really hard, you guys. I had to go up there and eat food. So these two guys, Stuart Feierstein, who is a neuroscientist at Columbia, and Terry Acree, who's a food scientist from Cornell, they got together with this chef, Jean-Luc Keffer, who is the head chef at Picnic Cafe. And they just basically cooked this really elaborate 9-course meal as a way to talk about what's going on in our bodies when we taste the different things we taste. It was a kind of a shishi event, about $100 a plate.
You didn't pay that, did you?
No.
Or if you did, I hope you expensed it. Okay.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that. Yeah, so, it seemed like a lot of kind of people both attracted to the restaurant world and some science-y folks. It looked like a lot of people had just come up a couple blocks down from Columbia.
Uh-huh. So what'd they do first?
Okay, well, there's this place setting. It just looks like a cafe, beautiful kind of bistro setting, plate, two forks, all that jazz. And then next to that, next to the forks is a nose clip. I brought it in. It's basically just like a glorified clothespin.
Can you see?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
You can put that on if you want.
But, all right.
So then they bring out these little two kind of gelatinous cubes, and they're kind of rusty color. And we're all wearing these nose.
Seriously? Everybody's wearing these?
You had to eat while you had this on your nose?
Yeah, it's really unpleasant.
And that is unpleasant. This is not a good sensation.
Imagine Allison Stewart. She's a very beautiful woman, but right now she's got this big yellow clip on her nose.
I have to say she sounds great.
I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. It's fine. I'm sorry.
So they, we have this thing on our nose, and we take one of these gelatinous cubes in our mouth, and you get a kind of sour sensation, but nothing more. And then we eat the other one and take it off, and your mouth just opens up into this like deep tomato-y complex flavor.
Huh.
It's really, we've heard about the energy. Of course, smell is very important to taste, but actually experiencing it sort of in two steps like that, it's really very interesting.
Interesting. So you had this mystery aperitif.
Yeah.
And then soup.
Yeah, the soup was amazing. They brought it out, and it looks like, kind of a potato soup. And we take our nose clips off, and we're just supposed to eat it and write down a few things that we taste. And I wrote down butter, potato, cream, black pepper, cauliflower. And then Acree, this food scientist, brings up a slide which shows the particle distribution of cream and Guinness beer and applesauce. And you see that cream and Guinness have very uniform particles, while applesauce is, there's big particles, small particles. And then he tells us there's no cream in this very, very creamy soup, or there's very little cream. It's just been prepared in a way that the cauliflower has been very finely and uniformly cut down.
It turns out that humans detect creaminess in a very special way. They're detecting particles, but they're not detecting particle size. They're detecting particle size distribution. So a whole bunch of balls that are very small but the same size is creamy, and that's the way cream is.
So you can kind of fool yourself into a creamy sensation by having very uniform small particles, which is good news if you're trying to cut back on
cream.
The fats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked to Dr. Acree after, and he told me that one possible explanation for this really, it's a very fine sense that we have to be able to figure out particle distribution in our taste. It might be, the selective advantage might be that babies can then detect when breast milk has gone bad, because as milk goes bad, you get a larger variation in the particles. So a kid detects that, he might reject what would be unhealthy milk.
Interesting. So I mean, I would hope that you had some wine to drink with all of this, but might that confuse the whole tasting situation with the food?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that people did get sort of happier about the science as the evening went on. But, they use the wine to talk about how discordant flavors actually share similar tastes. There's very few substances out there, relatively. There's less than 1,000 substances which influence the infinite number of tastes we experience. So they bring, we're drinking the Sauvignon Blanc, and they bring up a bar graph, which shows the different tastes you experience. And the biggest one is passion fruit, which is really easy to detect, actually, if you think about it when you drink that. The second biggest is urine. And I have to say, if you're looking at a bar graph while you're drinking the wine and it tells you the second biggest taste is urine, you will detect it. Anyway,
the power of suggestion. Yeah. Wow.
Acri told this related story, again, while we were eating, about how a visit to his lab by another food scientist led to a discovery.
He knew that I worked on Concord grapes and was very much interested in the aroma of La Brusca grapes. And he was walking through the biology lab one day to get some liquid nitrogen, and he smelled this intense smell of Concord grapes. When he went in, there was this female biologist cutting up this piece of flesh, which is the anal sac of the Japanese weasel. And so we analyzed it, and it turned out to be orthoaminoacetophenone, and we found exactly the same chemical in La Brusca grapes.
Delicious.
Yes.
Did not wake up this morning thinking I'd hear anal sac of the week.
In the food segment,
the food
no less.
Segment.
Oh, my. Okay.
Maybe
so.
From Pashman at some point during the day.
Okay. So you're talking about these like single moments or these notes that occur in these different foods and things that are decidedly non-foods, as we the aforementioned. What about the interaction of these single notes together? What do they do?
Right. Well, you know, we talk a lot about how these different foods will cancel each other out, you know, and you'll lose your sensitivity to a certain thing during the meal. And then Feierstein actually talked about, you know, if we think of these things as chemicals rather than tastes, we can actually see how they literally suppress our perception of other chemicals. He put it like this.
So about 100 millimolar, we call it, a fairly concentrated salt solution, will suppress the sense of sour, very, very sour, like pH 2, which is quite high acid. We in the business call this the margarita effect.
The margarita effect.
Yes. Yeah, there were no margaritas. There was this amazing dessert course, which, sorry, they had this tart, which they kind of left the science out of. But then they also brought out what they called a taste of pain, which was a habanero sauce next to a peppermint sauce. And he explained that, you know, our hot and cold receptors in our mouth actually respond to chemicals as well, which we all know because we've all experienced the hot sensation while eating hot sauce. And then we ate these things together. And it was interesting to feel actually heat and cold simultaneously because that's something you really never experience. And so we're all eating this thing and, you know, it's burning everybody up, this habanero sauce. And somebody asks, you know, how are we supposed to get rid of this? Which got Feierstein started on something else. He explained what was going on in our mouths when these molecules were actually coming in and we weren't able to get rid of this hot sensation.
The thing about hot sauce is it uses this capsaicin molecule, which tends to be a very oily, greasy molecule. And so it sits in the receptor quite a long time. It gets kind of in the lipids of your tongue, the tissue of your tongue. And so it'll sit there a long time. It's why it's so long lasting.
So basically what he's saying there is that the reason water doesn't work to cool you off when you have a hot sensation in your mouth is that the chemical causing that sensation actually sort of gets stuck in the receptor that's giving that heat feeling to your brain. And then he explained something which I thought needed no explanation, which is why tacos go so great with beer, because beer is actually going to be much better for removing a hot sensation. Many of us have sort of realized this on our own experimentation, but the alcohol in the beer is actually a solvent, so it takes care of that chemical rather than just washing over it the way water would.
I have learned so much.
I know.
Thank you, Ian.
Sure.
Let's drink Coronas and tacos. Eat them.